Fifth case of the day, the United States versus Cash. Mr. McKinley.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is James McKinley. I'm with the Federal Defender's Office in Indianapolis. I'm representing Elmo Cash, who is a 59-year-old former Marine, Vietnam combat veteran, who is presently serving a 30-month term of imprisonment at the United States Penitentiary in Terre Haute for threatening a Veterans Administration employee by the name of Truly Fair. The threat occurred during the course of an undeniably heated telephone conversation on October 17, 2003, pertaining to the status of Mr. Cash's VA benefits. This was actually the third of three telephone calls between Mr. Cash and Ms. Fair, the first occurring on September 10th, the second occurring on October 14th, just a few days before the October 17th conversation that gives rise to the case. Each of these conversations was memorialized by Ms. Fair in a VA form called a Form 119, or a report of contact, which just summarizes the conversations. The sole issue in this appeal is the government's use of those forms during the course of trial and the witness's testimony concerning specific statements or threats made by Mr. Cash during the various telephone calls, which were memorialized in these contact forms. Ms. Fair admitted to not having recollection of precisely what Mr. Cash said in these telephone calls, so she was shown a copy of the report with regard to each, ostensibly for the purposes of refreshing recollection. And then over defense objections was permitted to read these statements or selected portions of these memoranda to the jury under the guise of refreshed recollection. Despite her admission that she did not have specific recollection of what was said, and despite repeated objections from defense counsel that the memoranda themselves were not admitted.
Given Rule 8035 on recorded recollection, what difference does it make if it comes within the scope of refreshed recollection?
Well, 8035, first of all, Your Honor, it specifically states that if a memorandum is recorded, if a memorandum is admitted, the memorandum or record may be read into the evidence. And the government has maintained that all of these memoranda were, in fact, admitted under 8035. The fact of the matter is they weren't. The difference is that she's testifying as if this is her specific recollection, when, in fact, the documents themselves had not been admitted. There's been no challenge on the part of the defense counsel at this at the original trial, or no assessment on the part of the trial court as to whether a proper foundation had been laid for admission of these documents. And the reason there was no challenge,
the creator of the documents was there on the stand. Of course a foundation had been laid.
Well, the foundation is necessarily would necessarily require them to show that the not only is her recollection exhausted, but that the document or the record was made or adopted.
8035 doesn't require that.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
It doesn't require one's recollection to be exhausted.
No. No, it just requires that she would have had insufficient recollection to testify fully and accurately. And that part,
and that
part
was
of the foundation
obvious.
Was
late. Indeed,
I mean, I would acknowledge
your whole
that.
Point.
I would acknowledge that. However, it's also required under the rule that they established that the record was made or adopted at a time when the matter was fresh in the witness's memory. Now, that component of the foundation, I have to concede, was properly established with respect to the first and third conversations, but not with the second conversation. And again, I submit that this violation of the rules, and it was a violation of the rules, enabled the jury to base its decision, base its verdict here, on hearsay testimony in a document that was not properly before the jury. Now, I recognize that the government wants to gloss over this problem here by pointing to the evidence of the record that established proper foundation. And the case that they rely on, United States versus Green, really begs the question here, because Green involved a situation where the documents were in fact offered and they were in fact admitted, and it just addresses the question of whether the foundation was sufficient. Again, there was no challenge to the foundation here or no assessment on the part of the trial court as to whether the foundation was sufficient, because it was never, because they were never offered. In short, Your Honor, these are the federal rules of evidence. They aren't suggestions. They aren't proposals. They're requirements. The requirements here were disregarded, and I submit they should have consequences, because the consequence to my client here was, again, that the jury was able to base its decision on statements in a document that wasn't properly before the jury. And I submit that the procedure that was utilized here can't be sanctioned by this court to fill in memory gaps of any witness that's called to testify.
Is there any other basis for the admission of these statements of your client?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Is there any other basis for the admission at trial of these statements of your client?
Are you referring to the government's second argument here concerning statements being party admissions? Okay, let me address that. As I understand their argument, they're saying even if it was error to permit her to read the statements in violation of 8035, that they are nevertheless admissible under 801D2, again citing the Green case. And again, the Green case involved documents that had in fact been offered and admitted. Therefore, the party's statements are not considered hearsay because they don't meet the definition of hearsay under the federal rules. Here we have the statements that would constitute party admission, provided that the document itself had been admitted into evidence. It was a party admission contained in a hearsay document created by the witness. The witness, again, testified about the document as her own specific recollection, but when in fact she admitted, she didn't have specific recollection of the statements. She had to rely on the document that memorialized the conversations. So in light of that, given the impermissible reading of these statements into evidence under the guise of refreshing recollection, we'd ask the court to reverse and remand.
Thank you.
That concludes my argument, unless the court has any further questions.
All right. Not at this time. Thank you, Mr. McKinley. Ms. Allard?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Gail Hellert. I represented the government in this case, including presenting this case at trial. This court applies a deferential standard in analyzing a district court's evidentiary ruling, and this court will presume the district court ruled correctly unless the defendant can show a clear abuse of discretion. Mr. Cash cannot do that in this case. This case is extremely similar to the factual scenario presented in United States versus Green, cited in the government's brief. In Green, this court upheld the district court's admission of a police officer's recitation from his report of a defendant's statement that he had taken 11 days earlier as past recollection recorded. This court also recognized and affirmed that even if the defendant himself had not adopted the statement, that that part of the testimony and the evidence could be properly admitted as an admission by a party opponent under Federal Rule of Evidence 801D2. The defendant argues to the court today that Ms. Fair's memoranda themselves were hearsay but never offered as evidence. Well, he is correct on both points except for the implicit conclusion that they should have been offered as evidence. And, of course, the memoranda were hearsay, but the plain language of the rule of 8035 states that if admitted, the memoranda may be read into evidence but may not itself be received as an exhibit unless offered by an adverse party. The defendant argues in his brief that the court confused the practice of refreshing recollection with past recollection recorded. There was no confusion. The court heard Ms. Fair testify at the beginning of her direct examination that she filled out her Form 119 simultaneous to a telephone call with a veteran. She had to do this because she got another telephone call from the telephone queue as soon as she hung up. She took detailed notes as to a veteran's questions or things that she had to follow up on them. And the key point to the foundation being laid properly is that she could not recall lengthy quotes. That's most important in this case. On page 20 of the trial transcript, the government stated it was for past recollection recorded. On page 18, the district court showed that it understood the rule just fine. It said, I think she has testified that she can't turn it over and testify. From what she has just said, this is the best we are going to do. The defendant's cases, which make the substance of his argument, were cases that all dealt with the separate evidence rule of refreshing recollection under Rule 612. This is not an exception to the hearsay rule. Refreshing recollection has to do with a witness's memory being jogged by something, anything, really, but usually a writing. Mr. Cash categorizes this case as refreshing recollection does not make it so. Those foundations for each of those rules are different and separate. For past recollection recorded, a witness cannot recall, and the key thing is that no amount of reading the document or record or memoranda would refresh as an independent recollection, and therefore the document or memoranda comes to substitute as an accurate memory from the witness. The defendant's cited cases can all be distinguished in one important way. They all dealt with an allegation of refreshing recollection that was either used improperly or was alleged to be used improperly. The conclusion by the government is that the district court properly allowed Ms. Fair to read from her memorandum to the jury, and there was no abuse of discretion in ruling that this evidence be admitted. This crime is about threats, and the advantage to this rule being properly applied in this case is that it became a fact that the jury could weigh the evidence of what was really said by Mr. Cash and not just Ms. Fair's characterization of what Mr. Cash said versus Mr. Cash's version. There was, and what was admitted was the evidence. So we'd ask this court to affirm the district court.
Thank you. Hello, Mr. McKinley.
Your Honor, government counsel's reliance on United States versus Green, I submit, is simply misplaced. Green, again, involved a decision by this court to affirm the trial court's ruling that a foundation was adequate for admission and therefore could be read into the record. But again, the rule requires that if it's admitted, then it can be read into the record. It was never admitted here because it was never offered. Now, government counsel refers to a reference on page 20 of the transcript. That is the only reference in this trial record of past recollection recorded. In that instance, the witness had testified extensively to the content of the memorandum concerning the September 10th telephone conversation. And over repeated objections that it was improper to read that document into evidence because it had not been admitted, government counsel stated, I would like to say on the record that in addition to refreshing recollection, this is more accurately past recollection recorded. That single isolated observation from government counsel, again, is the only reference in the trial transcript to past recollection recorded and was unaccompanied by any offer to have the document admitted and then read into the record. Instead, the trial court is permitted to read off the selected portions as if she were testifying from her recollection. That, again, I submit, is a violation of the federal rules. That, I submit, is a basis for reversal.
Thank you, Mr. McKinley. Thank you, Ms. Hallard. The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the sixth case of the day.